It's just a reality. We are spending way more time in the battlefield of dating, really just the battlefield of life, in our kind of current cultural context of dating and singleness, leading into marriage differently than any other generation before us, okay? So we're just spending more time. We're getting married later, and so we're on the battlefield of dating and of singleness and of life just longer before we get into marriage. So we're entering marriage differently than any generation, any culture before us has entered. So what does it look like to be a Christian and to take part in this current culture, this current context of dating? So here's what I want us to do. Here's what the purpose of this sermon is, really, is as we get ready to start studying the Song of Songs, I want you to see what approach you should take into the song, okay? Because it's about marriage, and it's about sex, and it's about marriage in, or no, sex in marriage, but how should you approach it, right? Being single, being maybe dating, or just not married, how should you approach it? And one thing that you should know about this song is it has two choruses, two refrains that repeat themselves a few times in the song, and that gives us a hint at what's happening, what it's about. And one of the refrains, one of the choruses is this: I adjure you, or I encourage you, I exhort you, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not arise or awaken love until it pleases. And so it's a song about marriage and intimacy, but it's sung to single women in particular. The Song of Songs is written to single women. Okay? It's written to single women. That's really neat to realize and to understand where the daughters of Jerusalem, they're kind of like the bridesmaids to this bride, and she's singing first. She sings the most in the song. I mean, the story, the song is pretty much centered on her, and she's singing about her passion and her love for her husband, but she's singing it to her single friends. So it's helpful, it's instructive, but here's the thing. When this song was written and sung and practiced, people were getting married at 13, right? They would get married at 14, 15. Now, depending on if you're a man or a woman, you're getting married at 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. Men typically getting married a little bit later than the gals. That's another 10 or so years of the battlefield of singleness and dating and relationships and intimacy. And so we have more opportunity to have more scars, both relational scars and sexual brokenness and all of that, as we walk into marriage. We're just entering marriage different than any other culture before us. So there's some challenges there, right? There's some challenges there. And so I want you to look at the song over these next 12, 13 weeks when we start it next week as both an example for you. Some of you didn't have examples. Right? Some of you didn't have a godly example in the home, a godly marriage with your parents, or maybe there wasn't affection. Maybe sex was treated as, like, you know, quiet and dirty and wrong, and we're not going to talk about it, or it was unhealthy. I mean, just maybe you didn't have a good model. I want the song to be a model to you, and at the same time, and most importantly, I want it to be a picture of what you could be restored by the gospel, and here's what it can look like. All right, I want it to be a picture of hope to you as we approach it, okay? Now, it's not just the brokenness of our hearts that leads to the challenges of being single and dating. We're going to get to that when we get to our boy Solomon in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. But there's also just navigating the cultural waters of dating right now. In this generation, this point in time, there's just some legitimate challenges to participating, swimming in the culture of dating that we find ourselves in. And it really helps because if you don't step out of it for a moment, and if we don't just spend a few moments looking at it before we dive back in, we don't realize that we're swimming in it, and we don't even realize that we're wet. Right? We don't even realize what we're taking part in and what are some of the things that maybe we've learned from the world and not from the Bible and things like that. And so it helps to just look at what does dating culture look like right now? Right now, what does it look like? And maybe we can look at it with some gospel wisdom and sort of discern some things, okay? So I'm not single, all right? I've been married 14 years, so I had lots of conversations with single friends, and I read like 47 books on singles, which it was a lot, right? It was a lot. It wasn't 47. It was a lot, though. And so just trying to get an understanding of, like, what is it like, right? What is it like? And then just boiled your whole life down in like 7 minutes, okay? So that's what I'm gonna do right now. Categorizing it and just boiling all of your problems and all of your, you know, in just 7 minutes, right? This is gonna be you in 7 minutes. No, it's just a couple of issues, a couple of challenges that you face just because of the culture of dating and singleness and sex in our world, okay? Here's the first one, just calling this one meeting. Like, how do we meet, right? Meeting. How you meet someone in our culture is different than other cultures before us, right? Our grandparents, depending on how old you are, they got married to the person that lived in the same neighborhood as them. That's who you knew. That's just who you knew. You didn't move. You didn't change jobs. You didn't do that. You got married at not 13, 14, 15, but 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, right? You got married young, and so you married the person that lived across the street. The dating pool was a little bit, you know, it was small, right? It was small. And then your parents or our parents, depending, again, how old you are, their dating pool, their options weren't all that much bigger. A little bit more, right? They'd meet at the church. They'd meet at the school. Sometimes there was some moving of jobs or moving of where you might have lived. You were getting married a little bit later, so you get maybe meet somebody at school, college. But for the most part, it was pretty much the same. And then my generation, which is just 14 years ago, right? My dating generation, right? 14, 15, 16 years ago, it started changing, right? Options opened up, the advent of online dating, globalization was happening, more people were moving, more job changes, things like that. People were getting married later and later and later, but it's nothing like what you have 14 years after that. Your context is just way, way different when it comes to meeting people. There's more options now with social media, just, you know, what it is, and the dating apps that are all over the place. Literally, there's a never-ending pool of potential people that you could meet. Right? There's just always somebody new you could meet. If you just really wanted to, you could reach out to somebody, you could meet somebody, you could find somebody. This was an interesting stat for me, / I thought it was crazy, okay? On average, singles spend 90 minutes a day on dating apps like Tinder or Bumble. They open the app about 10 times a day, and they spend 9 minutes each time, what are you, swiping left, right, up, down, something. I don't know what you do. So literally today, if you own a smartphone, you have a 24/7 singles bar in your pocket. That's just a reality, right? You could just meet anyone, you could find anyone, you could, there's endless options. And the endless options is not bad in and of itself, right? I mean, that's not a bad thing necessarily, but there's a challenge to it because more and more, more and more this idea of the one or the soulmate is perpetuated by our culture and in our hearts anyways, right? We just want to find the one. But more and more now we think we can, right? They might be out there. The person that I'm with is great, but are they the best person for me? Right? Is my soulmate around the corner? Is there somebody better? Is there somebody hotter? Is there somebody smarter? Is there somebody out there? And there's actually options now and ways in which you can keep connecting with people. You can keep finding more and more people. And so it kind of just makes this idea of finding the best or finding the one a little bit more of a thing. By the way, there is no one and there is no soulmate. Just wanted to break that to you. There's something better. It's called biblical marriage, where you love and you commit to one another, and it's beautiful and amazing. The one and soulmate doesn't exist. It's a unicorn. You're looking for a unicorn, okay? You're on a social media app looking for unicorns. I just want you to know that. Here's what one author said about all this. He said, historically, we're at a unique moment. No one has ever been presented with more options in romance and yet expected to make a decision where the expectations are so astronomically high. I've got to find the perfect person for me. I've got to find the one. And you can look anywhere. And you can keep looking, and there's options everywhere. So meeting each other is a challenge, right? There's options. That's good. But we just keep wanting to find this perfect person, and we have this ocean of options that we're swimming in. Okay, here's the second kind of issue. It's just communicating with one another. All right, so once we meet somebody, then how do we ask them out on a date? Or how do we communicate with one another? How do we begin to build this kind of the early stages of a relationship? And I read this book, and this idea blew my mind. I can't believe I didn't think about this as just a reality. But there will never again be, in the history of our culture, a young man having to muster up the courage to call a young woman or woman and to know... Right, to know that her dad is probably going to answer the phone. That will never happen again. Right, guys, you have it easy. You have it easy. In fact, you don't even have to think about what to say. And rejection is so much easier because it's done over what? Text. You want to hang out? No. All right. All right. And so everything, and this isn't a surprise, it's just communicated over text. In fact, and this is like a scientific legit study, kind of. The majority of texts that single women get are these, all right? Here's the top seven. Hey. Hey. It's an exclamation mark. Hey. That's more wise. Hey, what's going on? What's up? What's up? What's going on? What you up to? Those are the top seven texts that single women get from single men. And apparently the hardest part about receiving those texts is how long do I wait to respond back with hey myself, right? Which is, I mean, that's legit. Like every generation's done that one, right? How long do I have to call back for her? But here's actually the biggest challenge when it comes to communication, and it's clarity. What are we doing? Do you want to hang out is the way in which most gals or even guys will get, asking out on a date, if that's a date. I don't know, is that a date or not? We don't know. Clarity to the relationship. What are we communicating to one another? What is happening here? What's going on here? Is this a date? Why are we dating? What's the process here? Where are we at in the dating process and all of that? There just seems to be a lack of clarity out there. And because of all of the options and because of the lack of clarity, maybe this is why there's a lack of clarity, when we are communicating to one another, we're actually communicating to multiple options, multiple people at the same time. When we send out, hey, we sent that out to four other people as well. That's just what's happening. Not me. I'm 14 years married. I'm not here. Y'all, right? Y'all. Multiple options, multiple people throwing bait out into the water to see if a fish bites. Hey, who's going to hey me back, right? Want to hang out? Who's going to say sure? And we're doing that. We're communicating to multiple people at a time. Lack of clarity, multiple options, communication is challenging. It's hard. Now, once we're actually dating, there's some challenges as well. Or go out on the date, there's some challenges as well because of all of the endless options available. And now, we talked last week about, man, if you're a Christian and your life is centered on Jesus, that should filter out a lot, right? That should just filter out a lot. It should just, the pool should get a lot smaller when we do that. But because of all of the options and the way that the dating culture is practiced, you are, because you're communicating with multiple people, you're also dating or hanging out with multiple people. Now, that's not necessarily bad, especially early on. Right? There's no biblical definition for boyfriend. Right? It's just not in the Bible. You're married or you're not married. So you're not bound to anybody. You can keep your options open, right? You're never like in it until you're actually at the altar, and I'm standing there, Pastor Adrian, Pastor Brent standing there next to you. Okay, that's when then it's over. Okay, then it's over. But until then, it's not over. But here's the problem, right? So keeping your options open is okay, especially earlier on in the relationship. That relationship should progress to something. But the reasons why haven't been maybe the best reasons. Some of you, you're afraid of being hurt. And so if you can have three or four people that you're in dating or hanging out with or in some sort of relationship with, if one of them breaks it off, it doesn't hurt as bad because you got three others, right? Or if you're just keeping your options open because you're still looking for that spark, that high of infatuation, the next hotter one or better one or whatever, well, that's just not a godly way to approach dating either. And so dating has its challenges because we're probably dating multiple people, not just one or two. We're not trying to get to any sort of depth of relationship where we can see what is she really like and what's his character like? How does he treat people? Does she love Jesus, like actually love Jesus? We never get there. We're just kind of swimming on the surface with two or three or four different people, never actually diving deep to see what this thing's actually about, what it's actually about at all. Can we see if they have the Song of Songs type character, if they have this kind of biblical, like, are we good together? Can we do this thing the right way? We're never getting there. We're never actually getting there. And so then the infatuation begins to wane, and you bounce to the next person to swim in shallow waters with. But that's when, like, when the infatuation wanes, that's when love begins to grow. That's when you actually have a relationship. That's when the real stuff happens. And so we need to get to that. Technology and culture, it lets you kind of stay on the surface with a bunch of people, never getting into any sort of depth. Right? Those are some challenges. Here's the last challenge, and this one's probably the most painful in terms of just its effect on dating life and singlehood, singleness, and even in the church as well, because it's influenced and infected the church as well. But some of you have heard this term, the hookup culture. The hookup culture is basically sex of many kinds that's casual and outside of any relational commitment, much less a marriage covenant. Okay? Sociologist Donna Friedis, she explains kind of the components of the hookup culture. It's on college campuses, it's in just our city and wherever you might go where there is singleness and romance and dating. She says it's really these nine things. It's anything from kissing to sex. It's some sort of intimate act outside of any sort of relationship, right? Anything from kissing to sex. The relationship is brief. This isn't something that's going on for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. It's something that is very brief. The hookup culture has, or attempts to have, zero emotion or attachment aligned to the physical relationship that was just developed. Fourth, it is defined by those who participate it as efficient. We're really busy, right? We're in school, we're trying to get grades, we're involved in a lot of things, or we just started a job, or whatever it is. We're busy. This is an efficient way to be intimate. Don't have to put in the time, the effort, don't have to build relationship. It's efficient. It's also really the only option. So a lot of people, students in particular, will communicate like shame and disappointment in participating in this hookup culture, but it's really the only option. No one is dating, which is the next thing that she says. No one's actually really dating anymore. So in like, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, if you were a Christian, you know, you were talking about kissing, dating goodbye, and courting and all that kind of stuff, and we were weird, right? We were the weird ones. Now, if you're going to be the weird Christian, you just go out on dates. Isn't that weird? That's just weird. You're actually going to go out on a date? Yeah. Man, Christians are so weird. Well, you should have seen us 15 years ago. We were weirder. We're just, you know, and so that's just a rare thing, actually dating. This was eighth. This is crazy. People desire romance, but listen, they talk about romance as talking. Romance is not the physical. Romance is the relational. Romance is the communicating, the relating, the emotional. They desire romance, but they're not talking about physical. They're talking about actual relationship that they're missing out on. And then lastly, and this was, I was really, really, really surprised to hear that this was a part of the hookup culture, but apparently alcohol is usually involved. That's what she says. I was just shocked. I had no idea. Crazy. It's crazy. Now, here's what another sociologist, Lisa Wade, says about all of this, okay? All of this, the challenges that you're facing. Here's what she says about this, and you just see kind of a dark, bleak picture, and maybe why Solomon in Ecclesiastes talks like he does. This is just a reality of the waters that you're swimming in, okay? This is what Lisa Wade says. She says, first, the presence of pervasive sex hinders the development of friendship and true love. The presence of pervasive sex hinders the development of friendship and true love. We just don't know how to relate to one another emotionally or mentally or spiritually. We're just on the surface. We're just on the surface. Two, women feel like they are seen only as sexual objects, and in fact, that's true. They are. That's how they are viewed. Three, romance is lost. This is why we're studying the Song of Songs, because romance is lost. A doting desire of a husband to a wife, or a wife to a husband. Passion that is infused by a godliness that says, man, God is good that he made this and that he made you and that he made marriage. There's just something missing. Romance is missing. Four, there is little pursuit of mutual pleasure in sex as the act is individuated. I think I pronounced that right. I maybe didn't. Here's what this means. We'll learn this in the Song of Songs. This means that it's bad sex that you're having. Legit. Like, that's just unbiblical sex. Five, this is most grievous. Sexual assault is common. You guys have been following the Me Too stuff. We've talked about this a dozen times. I have to take a moment to talk about this. We've preached two whole sermons on sexual assault. It's all throughout our congregation, right? People that have been abused or assaulted. It's all throughout. We've heard all the stories. And so listen to me. If you've been date raped, if you have been assaulted, if you have been abused, we want you to come to us. We do not want you to try to wrestle with that alone or push that down. Come talk to us. Okay? We will believe you. You hear me? We will believe you. We will cry with you. We will pray with you. We will tell you, testify to you about the goodness and grace of Jesus to redeem and restore all that is broken in you. We can bring 15 families, 15 individuals up here to testify right now to the goodness of God to heal and restore. But this is what we've created. This is what we're swimming in. It helps to step out of it and to look into the waters and just see, okay, this is what I'm participating in. This is what I need to navigate now, okay? And it's not just the culture that makes it challenging. It's also the brokenness, the sin in our hearts. And so what I want to do with the rest of our time is I want to look at three silhouettes, three outlines that Solomon in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, before we get to Song of Songs, gives us. And for all of us, single or married, we're going to be able to see if just we resonate with any of the brokenness that we see. Can we see any of the, like, can we just see ourselves in any aspect of what's broken in these three silhouettes of people? That's two women in Proverbs and then Solomon, the man, in Ecclesiastes that I want us to see. And so this should apply to all of us, single or married, okay? So Proverbs chapter 5, I'll put this up on the screen for you so you can just kind of keep your thumb in Ecclesiastes 7. Proverbs is written to from a father to a young man. As Song of Songs is written from written to the young ladies. And so Proverbs is helpful to the men in particular, but we'll see that we can find ourselves in all of these people. Proverbs 5, starting in verse 3. Here's the first silhouette. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey. Her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood. Sharp as a two-edged sword, her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. That's death. And here's the key verse, verse 6. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. So here's what this is saying. This is true for men, for women, for your prospective boyfriend, girlfriend, maybe future husband or wife. Here's what's possible: that there's some people, right? There's some men, there's some women that wake up in the morning and they see the world as their runway, and they get dressed in whatever style befits their subculture that they've adhered to, and they get dressed and they're ready, like they're dying, like in everything that they're doing, they want to be accepted, they want to see affection, they want people to applaud them, they want love and adoration, and so they go out into the world as their runway. They're on their dating app, spending their 90 minutes, or they're connecting with who they're connecting to, they're talking with who they're talking to, and they have no idea why. They don't even know what they're doing. There's no understanding of what's happening in their heart, the desires that are going on. Why am I dressed this way? And why do I talk with them? And why am I flirting? And why am I doing the things that I'm doing? They do not even know. She does not ponder the path of life, her ways wander, and she does not know it. There's just a lack of maturity here. There's a lack of self-awareness. There's a lack of understanding your own heart, your own desires, what you're longing for. And so you don't even know the waters that you're swimming in. You don't even realize how dangerous they are. You don't even know what you're doing. There's no sense of, what does the gospel say about this? And what does the Bible speak to this relationship or how I should view this world? And there's just no sense of that. You just don't even know. And so in Proverbs 5, it's a forbidden woman who drips honey on her lips. But this could be a Christian who just isn't even aware of how their life is consumed by the culture that they're swimming in. And they have no idea that their participation in romance and relationship and dating has been shaped by what, you know, the world says, and not even at all shaped about who Jesus is and what Jesus has done for them. They're just unaware, and there's just a lack of intentionality in how they live. Okay? All right, Proverbs 7. I'll pull it up again for you. This is a similar woman we find here, but then there's a glaring difference as well. For at the window of my house, I've looked out through my lattice, and I've seen among the simple. And when he says simple here, by the way, it literally means to be open, right? The simple person keeps his options open. He's uncommitted. He has no convictions, right? He's looking for the gal that's you know, he's looking for the hottest gal. He's looking for the spark in the relationship. He's just going from person to person to person, right? 20 dates, or rather one date with 20 women as opposed to 20 dates with one or two women, right? That's him. He's simple. Keep going to verse 7. I have perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense, passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house. In the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness, and behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. Circle that, highlight wily of heart, that's key, we'll come back to it. Verse 11, she is loud and wayward, her feet do not stay at home, now in the street, then in the marketplace, and at every corner she lies in wait. She seizes him and kisses him, and with bold face she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I have paid my vows. She's religious, right? She went to the temple and she made sacrifices. She believes in God. She goes to the porch on Tuesday. She listens to whatever his name is, Stephen Furtick podcasts. And she comes to Paradox Church on Sunday, right? She's religious. Keep going, verse 15. So now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Nothing like a cinnamon bed. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he will come home, not to the end of the month. With much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. This gal is a lot like the Proverbs 5 woman, right? A forbidden woman with honey dripping from her lips. But here's the difference. She knows exactly what she's doing. She knows exactly what she's after. She is not unaware at all what she's looking for. This is the guy, the gal, that knows what they desire. And what they desire is a good time, not a good relationship. They want to swim on the surface, not in deep waters, and we run into them all the time. Maybe that is you. Because here's a key phrase in verse 10. This tells us a lot about this person. This person is broken too. Verse 10, it says, "And behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart." In your Bibles, there's probably a footnote that directly translates what wily of heart means. It means she's guarded in her heart. Her dress is revealing, right? She's dressed as a prostitute, but she's closed off in her heart. Sex she'll give, but her heart? No way. No way. No way. Many of us, we are just like this woman. Because of past experiences, because of maybe past shame in other relationships, maybe it is abuse, maybe it is assault, maybe it is something like that. There's just something in our past. Maybe it's a relationship with our dad that was just broken. There's just something that has broken, shattered our heart, and so now we are protective of it, guarded. But we still desire intimacy, we still desire closeness, we still want to be wanted. And so now we go looking for that in a way that it wasn't designed to be experienced. We're broken relationally, we're broken sexually, we're broken in our intimacy. We guard our heart, but we still want to be in relationships. And so we want access to the body, but we just don't want to give access to the heart. We want the privilege of sex without the till death do us part, steadfast covenant, Bible love. And we're fooling ourselves if we don't think that's going to harm us even more. And so then we get to Solomon in Ecclesiastes 7, the third silhouette. We get to what he looks like. This is Solomon at the end of his life, looking back at his life, wondering, have I learned anything? Okay. So Ecclesiastes 7, verse 25. He says, "I turned my heart to know and to search out and to seek wisdom and the scheme of things, to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness that is madness." He's at the end of his life. He had 1,000 wives. They had turned his heart away from the one true God. They were non-Christian wives. First Kings says that his heart drifted from God. And so he's looking back at his life now and he's saying, is there anything I can help people with my mistakes? Is there anything I learned? And so he says then in verse 26, yeah, here's one thing I learned. I find something more bitter than death. What's more bitter than death? Here it is. The woman whose heart is snares and nets and whose hands are fetters, she's a trap. She's a trap. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is taken by her, right? He says she's a trap. Solomon went on a few bad dates, apparently, had a little bit of a bad time a couple of times, and now he's saying women are a trap, right? If you read Ecclesiastes, Solomon really, really needs a hug, right? It's just obvious. Right? It's like he's listening to Radiohead constantly and just thinking about all the traps that he fell into with women. That's how Ecclesiastes reads. Kind of depressing. Here's what he says, verse 27. "Behold, this is what I have found," says the preacher, "while adding up one thing to another to find the scheme of things. I'm really trying to figure this out, which my soul has sought repeatedly, but I have not found. One man among 1,000 I have found, but a woman among these I have not found." He's saying friendship is really, really hard, right? One man among 1,000 I've found. It's hard to have real, actual, true friendship. I mean, where there's trust and there's no fear and there's no pride and there's no insecurities and there's no comparison. We're not kind of playing those games. Like actual, real friendship is hard. But he says romance is even harder. Not one woman among 1,000 have I found. That's true for some. He literally had 1,000 women. He had 700 wives, 300 concubines or girlfriends, basically, is what that means. And he had experienced every kind of woman. He had experienced every kind of fantasy, Solomon did. There was nothing that he did not know. He swam in the shallow waters of 1,000 different relationships, but what he's saying is, I could not, I do not, I did not know biblical love, true love. I just didn't experience it. I didn't know it. Like that kind of love that says, here's my heart. And I've seen your heart, and there's good in it, and there's brokenness in it, but here's the thing, I'm still gonna love you. I'm gonna stay even if it gets hard. He didn't know that kind of love. He couldn't. He couldn't. When Solomon sat across the table from a woman, he did not see someone made in the image of God. He did not see someone with a heart, broken or not. All Solomon saw were hair and eyes and breasts and form and figure. That's all he saw. What kind of pleasure can she bring me? What kind of prestige can she bring me? What kind of political power will this white woman give me? That's how Solomon saw women. He had been so shaped by the brokenness of his own heart and the practice of relating to someone just physically and just on the surface. He just didn't have the ability to see her soul. What's going on here? I mean, why is everything so broken? Why is this so hard? Well, Solomon actually gives us a hint in verse 29. He says, see, this alone I have found. Here's one thing that I've been able to see, that God made man upright. Right? God made man upright. God made man in his image. God made man whole. God made man in right relationship with God. We had right relationship with God, and so we knew the source of our identity. We were God's, right? And we knew the source of where like love came from. It came from God. And we knew like where beauty came from, and we knew where pleasure came from and joy came from. It came from God. We were whole. Right? We were whole. We participated in the wholeness of a relationship with God, where God has given us good desires. Right, godly desires for intimacy or pleasure or relationship, to be known, to serve. Right, we were given these good desires from God, and we walked in them, and it was beautiful. God made man upright, but then what does it say? But they have sought out many schemes. We rebelled against that. We rejected the God of love and went looking for love on our own terms. We sought out many schemes. And so now our desires are distorted. Our heart is broken. We still have those desires. They're godly because they came from God. We just don't know what to do with them now. Right? We're seeking out many schemes. We're trying to figure out where to find love and joy and satisfaction and all of those things. Now sin has distorted our desires. Do your desires not lead you into as much pain as they do pleasure? Don't your desires lead you into as much pain as they do pleasure? It's because your desires are good and godly and they're meant to lead to pleasure, but they're broken because of sin and so they lead to pain. We have sought out many schemes. We don't know what to do with them. Where do we go with these longings and desires? Where do we go? We're not going to the Lord. We're not going to God anymore. So what happened is God said, hey, you're hungry? And we're like, yeah, we're hungry. He's like, yeah, I put that desire in you. Here's all this food. Isn't it beautiful? Isn't it great? Look at all this food. But our sin distorted that desire. Now food is not food from the glory of God, right? For the glory of God, a gift. Now we self-medicate, we comfort, we overeat, we undereat, we purge to control, right? Food is no longer just food. It's something for us to try to figure out and manage and control. And God gives us this desire, right? You want meaning, you want purpose in your life? I do, I want meaning and purpose. Here's this garden, cultivate it. Join me in what I'm doing and filling the earth with my beauty and my glory. Join me in it. Here's a meaningful life. Let me make work meaningful for you. And sin, it distorts that desire. Now work is about us, not God. Work is about us being seen as meaningful, not life being meaningful to the glory of God. Now we need to perform. We need to perform better than everybody else. We need to get straight A's. We need to make a lot of money. We need to kill it. We need to be awesome. We need people to look at us and see how meaningful we are because of our work. Right? You have a desire for beauty. Here's all this beauty. Let me give you all this beauty. The beauty of creation you can have. But now in sin, beauty becomes vanity. We want beautiful, shiny new things. We want to be beautiful. We want people to look at us and see that we're beautiful, as opposed to us seeing the beauty of the world and that beauty boomeranging back to the God who is beautiful. How beautiful God must be to have created all this beauty. You have this desire for pleasure. Let me give you this gift of sex. It's beautiful. But sin distorts that, turns that gift of sex into a hookup culture, pornography, sleeping with your girlfriend. It's broken and distorted. And is there any more pain that's been caused in your life or your world than the pain of sexual distorted desires? And so then when it comes to dating and relationship and romance and those things, those are good desires. Those are godly desires. They're just distorted. And so this is hard. You don't know where to go. You don't know what to do with them. This is just hard. With the way that the world is in its dating culture and the brokenness in our own hearts, it's no wonder why dating and singleness is hard for you. Right? Sin has distorted our desires. Wine is now drunkenness. Work is now anxiety. Sex is now pornography. Beauty is now vanity. Everything has been twisted and turned. What do we do? Is there any like hope that we cling to? What should we do? It's hard, right? This is why I want you to consider your approach to the Song of Songs, because it's going to paint this beautiful example for you of what this can look like. Here's what relationship and romance and marriage and sex can look like. Here's how beautiful it is. But you need more than that. You need more than just an example, right? You need more than just somebody to say, hey, the pieces of your heart are over there. You should go get them. You need somebody that's going to give you a new heart. You need somebody that can restore you, that can redeem you, that can put your heart back together. You need Jesus, ultimately. And so the song is, it's in the Bible. And it's a man and a woman, and they're always in a garden, it seems, right? And it's meant to remind you of the beauty of the garden in Genesis 2. Right, with Adam and Eve. And it's also meant to push you forward from the Song of Songs to the garden that Jesus was in, where he's sweating drops of blood and he's going to drink the cup of God's wrath towards sin and sinners. It's meant to remind us of both gardens. We can go back to the Garden of Eden, where Adam and his wife lay naked and they're not ashamed. You can have that in the gospel. You can have that. And it's meant to point us forward to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus is purchasing your new heart, rescuing you from your sin. There's hope. You need hope. You need a redeemer. Can't just give you tips on romance and sex and dating and all that stuff. And even though in a second I'm going to give you some tips. But you need more than that. You need Jesus. Jesus doesn't treat you like others do. He is kind. Jesus won't abandon you or leave you or reject you like others do. He's faithful. Jesus loves you even when the relationship gets hard. He is filled with love. He has given himself completely to you. The gospel is saying, I've seen your heart. It's God saying, I've seen your heart, and it's broken and sinful, but I still love you. I'm not going anywhere. Now, as we pursue that, as maybe even now, just the Spirit of God just takes some of that and brings about some healing in you quickly, can we just consider a few things in regards to what does the gospel say then? What does the Bible say then for how we can date amongst all these challenges and issues? Five quick things. One, relate biblically. Relate biblically. There's two relationships in the church in the New Testament. It's husband and wife and brother and sister. So that guy, that gal is first your brother or your sister. There's no category for boyfriend, girlfriend. You relate to them as brother and as sister. Because what happens is when now all of a sudden we're dating or we're boyfriend or girlfriend, we think we have greater access to one another. We don't. We think we have a greater commitment to one another. Not really. Not really. No, they're brother and they're sister, and then they become husband and they become wife. Okay? Relate biblically with one another. Second, date with clarity, right? Stop hanging out unless you're actually hanging out, right? If you're going to go on a date, go on a date. Dating is an evaluation process. Should we get married? Is this something we should do together? And so you should be clear about where you are in that process. Right now we're just hanging out. Okay. All right, we're just hanging out. Now we're going to go on a date. Okay, we're going to go on a date. Now where are we in the process? Let's be clear with one another. Why? Because that's loving. And that's just loving your neighbor, right? Be clear. Thirdly, in all things, purity. The Song of Songs, what it's not going to do is say, here's all the bad things about sex. Here's the dangers of sex before marriage. Don't do this, okay? Right? The Song of Songs is not going to do that. It's going to say, look at the erotic, passionate, beautiful, godly, unrestrained marriage bed. Look at how amazing it is. Do you want it? Do you want it? That's what it's going to do. It's beautiful. Purity in everything. Right? People ask, how far is too far? What can I do? It's wrong questions. Just wrong questions. Right? When? And when you get married, do whatever you want. For the most part. Moving on. Listen, sex is uniting, okay? It's going to bond you, and it's going to keep you from being bonded emotionally, spiritually, mentally. Right? That's just scientific fact. Sex is bonding. What number am I on? Four, date graciously. Listen to this. God's perfect person for you is not perfect. Okay? God's perfect person for you is not perfect. Date graciously. The one doesn't exist, right? The one does not exist. Your soulmate does not exist. You should be gracious to one another. You're not that good, by the way. You're a sinner, you're going to date a sinner, and you're going to marry a sinner, okay? So in the midst of that relationship, even if it doesn't end in marriage, that person should be able to say, I know and love Jesus more for having spent time with them. I'm glad that we had that relationship for that time. That's how that should end, okay? And then fifthly, date in community. I mean, if dating is an evaluation process, and it is, you have blind spots, and you can't do that on your own. You need other people to speak into that. Hey, man, here's what we know about you, and or here's what we've seen in him, and man, I don't know about this, and you're gonna what? You're gonna get married? And I don't think I want to participate in that. You're crazy, you know. Whatever it is, date in community. Okay. Let's approach the song as, man, this beautiful example of what could be, but ultimately as this is going to show me the love of Jesus for me as the perfect husband who can restore the brokenness of my heart. And maybe we can experience the beauty of what the Song of Songs portrays, okay? Let's all, married, single, let's go into next week with just a lot of gospel hope of what Jesus might do.